I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show, Hotel Mars, Episode N. David Livingston, my colleague and co-host and co-pilot, and we are concerned with how NASA, the very successful space agency for the United States these last decades, works with other space agencies in the news. In particular today, the Japan Space Agency, called JAXA affectionately, that has planetary probes that have been, are being, will be successful into the future. And we welcome Dr. Jim Green, who is the Director of Planetary Science at NASA. Jim, a very good evening to you. Thank you for this. First, before we go to the probes themselves, the brave little robots working hard for the Japanese Space Agency, I want to explain to the audience how many different space agencies NASA works with. We know you work with the Japan Space Agency and the European Space Agency and Roscosmos and Canada. Are there other space agencies you're working with? A very good evening to you.
Good evening, John. A pleasure to be here. We work very closely with the, in addition to the ones you mentioned, the British Space Agency, the French, their French agency called CNES, and DLR, which is the German Space Agency. We work with them on a whole variety of projects. So our program in planetary science is really very international. We have only a few spacecraft that are totally U.S.
We want to go to a spacecraft that has a romantic tale. And, David, you're going to begin with Hayabusa 1. Go ahead, David.
Good evening, Jim. And Hayabusa 1 already returned samples from an asteroid back in 2010. What part did NASA play with that mission, and do you help create it? Do you help design it? Is it partially your hardware? Is it your analysis? What exactly did you do to help get that sample back to Earth?
Well, JAXA approached us early on in their Hayabusa 1 mission. And we created what we call a Memorandum of Understanding, an MOU. And in that, we delineated our roles. Now, JAXA was planning to have all the instruments from Japan. They were going out to a huge asteroid called Itokawa. And but they needed some help in terms of leveraging our experience base and our tracking capability. Now, our experience has been, you know, deep space missions, and so they needed a little help in understanding some of the navigation challenges. They needed help in understanding some of the ion engine capabilities that do change orbits and therefore change navigation, in addition to backing them up and tracking. And then, of course, understanding that when they bring the samples back, how do you really manage samples that we call extraterrestrial? In other words, foreign from space samples, and that requires quite a bit of careful curation. So we covered a number of those things like that to help that mission along.
Hayabusa had a romantic ending because at one point, I remember the reporting carefully, it was considered in trouble, damaged, and deeply, deeply compromised. I believe there were troubles with the engines, with the system, with communication. Did NASA get a call in the middle of the night? Did you get a 3 a.m. call on Hayabusa? Did you work together to make this a success, Jim?
We did. We did. You know, as they were running into trouble, we were there to consult. We were there to help problem solve. But it's really the JAXA team that should take the majority of the credit. They improvised. They really worked hard. They are the ones that understood the system they had. And so from that perspective, we were just delighted to be able to help them in any way we could.
It's like a robot Apollo 13, Jim, to read about the excitement of how they use systems that weren't designed to save it, to right the ship, get communication, and bring it home the long way.
That's right. I think you can find stories like that in any space agency. There's one thing that happens when we're in space teams can be created that can really, from the power of the team, solve what might look like insurmountable problems. And JAXA has certainly exemplified that approach in many different ways. And this is just one of them. Akatsuki is another one.
Right. We'll get to Akatsuki. David, you have another question on Hayabusa?
Yes. Does NASA play a role in analyzing the material brought back, or is that all Japanese?
Well, NASA does play a role in several aspects of managing the samples. In fact, on their sample return, we flew a special aircraft, followed the sample all the way down, took images, triangulated where it would be, helped them recover it, and then we divided the samples. NASA got 10% of the samples. And so we both have been analyzing them, and we've learned a lot about what Itokawa is all about.
And what about the morale? Is it difficult to maintain when you've got so many risks and you come to anthropomorphize this robot? I'm speaking from reading about it, Jim. I don't know if it actually happens. When you think of it as a friend that you want to bring home, does that boost the morale? Do people get in despair between talking from NASA and talking to Japan? Is there any romance like that to report?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. These are not short-term projects. These are, you know, years long, sometimes more than half a decade to a decade long experiences. You come to know the system, you come to understand it, you command it, it does fantastic things, the data comes back, the excitement is there. How could you not feel ownership? How could you not feel that your heart and soul is in each and every one of these missions that you do? That happens in every one of our agencies.
We go now to Akatsuki, since you mentioned it. Akatsuki is another Japanese spacecraft, I'm presuming, it means dawn, working with NASA. Yeah. It was to go into orbit around Venus, and it missed its orbit. It was a rascal. It went running to the sun. Was there despair when you learned that, Jim?
Yes, it hit me hard too. Not as hard as those in Japan that were working directly on the mission. And the reason why is Venus as a sister planet is hard to observe. It has this intensive atmosphere with huge temperatures and pressures. We want to look and see how the surface and the atmosphere interact. We want to understand if it's volcanically active today. There's so many things we want to learn about Venus. You know, Venus has a runaway greenhouse, and what's happened on Venus could happen on Earth. And so the more we look at our sister planet, the better. And so losing an opportunity like Akatsuki was really that was a bad day.
Did NASA help figure out how to adjust the thrusters to bring it back to Venus, or what role do you play in that type of procedure?
Well, some aspects of the propulsion system were American, okay? And okay. So consequently, not supplied by NASA, but were American vendors. And so consequently, their interaction with us was indeed in trying to obtain information that would allow them to be able to deeply analyze and understand what the malfunction was all about. Once you do that, then you can say, okay, this is what we think the current status of our equipment is. How can we use it then to our benefit, even though it's crippled, to be able to get into orbit? And so orbit dynamics plays a role. Understanding how the spacecraft is, it's still orbiting the sun like Venus, in a Venus-like orbit. So what does it take for it to get caught back up? And then at what velocity would it be that you would then have to make certain maneuvers to be able to allow Venus's gravity capture you and get you into orbit? They were able to work that out.
This is Hotel Mars with David Livingston, and we're very pleased to be speaking to Dr. Jim Green, who is head of planetary sciences at NASA, about how NASA has worked with the Japanese space agency, JAXA, in particular on two missions we've talked about. And when we come back, I want to ask how NASA and JAXA work together, if it's like Apollo 13, where they run simulations with similar craft and game out the rescues of robots that have run away. Are just disobedient for a while and need to be brought back. And then we'll speak of the future of working between NASA and JAXA. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show. So this is the John Batchelor Show. Dr. Jim Green, the head of planetary sciences, that's the robots, the brave robots that are out there exploring the solar system and beyond. These are our surrogates in space. We're very affectionate towards them. We celebrate all of them. NASA works with a number of space agencies, the ESA for one, primarily their success with Rosetta. It has its own probes, Dawn, and New Horizons. We're talking of its work with the Japanese Space Agency. David Livingston, my colleague, is here as well. Jim, I enjoyed Apollo 13's part where they got into a craft that looked like the wounded probe, the wounded Apollo craft, and gamed out how to bring it home without sufficient supplies, without sufficient air. Yeah. It was very romantic. Do you do that when a robot gets in trouble? Do you all come together, get a model, sit in a room, and simulate everything on you, if physically as well as in digitally?
Absolutely. What happens when we launch a spacecraft is we have what we call an engineering unit. In other words, we have all the computers, all the setup, all the exact same software sitting on the ground as on that spacecraft. And the reason why that's so important is if there is a problem with a command that we made or the spacecraft ends up in an unusual state that we can't understand, we run simulations on these computers on the exact same kind of hardware. Typically it shows us immediately how the commands may have messed things up, or if it didn't, what to do next to be able to understand how to interrogate the spacecraft to be able to get the information we need to know to understand what happened.
David, you have a question about Akatsuki, or do you want to go on to Hayabusa too?
Well, I do notice some of these pictures that are showing this strange bow in the atmosphere of Venus as it's getting closer. Is there any clue as to what that is?
Yeah, Akatsuki has been finding now that it's in orbit around Venus, some fantastic things. It's looking at Venus in a variety of wavelengths that we haven't done as routinely as we should have. And that always means that it tells us things that we couldn't have imagined before. The cloud structure is indeed extensive. Some of it is made up of sulfuric acid. Some of it is clouds like ours that are typically moisture. But what really is important is to see the features and then understand through modeling how the physical environment is changing based on what the cloud structure looks like.
Jim, I want to go on to a new mission that launched at the end of 14, I believe, Hayabusa 2, which is another recovery mission. It's headed to an asteroid and not for many years. I'm presuming NASA's participation is similar to Hayabusa 1. What is the big plan? It's not in trouble. No romance is necessary. It's all performing, according to the reporting, perfectly. What is the romance of an asteroid return? Why do we want samples? What will that teach us?
Okay, this is a really great asteroid. Now, when Hayabusa 1 went to Itokawa, it really opened our eyes. It was a very unusual object because we couldn't hardly find any craters on it. It had all this material that seemed to have been stuck on it. you know, like a bulletin board where you, you know, stick your favorite stick pin in, and as it was full of these boulders all over the place. And we recognized that these objects do accrete material. And some of these objects accrete it in a way that make it look like a rubble pile. Now, that's really exciting because it may have a whole variety of material that's been actually made in the early part of our solar systems at different locations around the sun. Hayabusa 2 is going to an asteroid we've never seen before. It has a designation, 1999 JU3, but it's a special asteroid. We believe it's more like a hexagon. It's not the long banana-looking asteroid that Hayabusa was. But what's really spectacular about this asteroid is it's what we call a carbonaceous chondrite. Now, that means it has all kinds of organic material on it. This material, we believe, was created early on in the solar system, and asteroids like this one bombarded the Earth, perhaps even seeding the Earth with the right kind of materials that within our evolving Earth environment may have sparked life. So by going to asteroids like this, we really learn about how the early elements of the solar system come together to maybe give us a hint on how life may have started here on Earth.
David?
I believe Hayabusa 2 has 4 landers on it. So is any of this hardware NASA made, or are you consulting and supporting on this mission?
We are consulting. We're doing many of the same things on Hayabusa 2 that we did with Hayabusa 1. So Japan is very much in the lead. And so nearly all the hardware, meaning all the instruments except for one of the rovers, I believe, is Japanese made. And so we're going to back them up in tracking. We'll help them in navigation. When the samples come back, we're going to fly those special planes. We're going to look at how the sample returns. We're going to be able to help triangulate it. And in return, we'll get a fraction of the sample to study.
What did you learn from Hayabusa 1 that is improved or that you look forward to for the success? Because the moment of crisis will come when it tries to land on Hayabusa or to get the samples back. That's where all the risk was from the first mission. Is there anything new here that you've learned, Jim?
Well, this system, Hayabusa 2, is very similar in many ways to Hayabusa 1. And so Hayabusa 1's problems have been analyzed in such great detail that JAXA has made a number of modifications that will allow them to manage this particular mission, I think, much easier, let's say. Hopefully it won't have the surprises that Hayabusa 1 had. And so that's very helpful. But the data we learned from Hayabusa 1 was really fascinating. Itokawa, which has been made early on in our solar system, it's being bathed in the solar wind, which is the exhale from the sun. You know, the sun constantly loses matter. It exhales in all directions. And it's being bombarded by the solar wind material. And so the samples that we got from JAXA, from Hayabusa 1, told us a lot about how solar wind material impinges on the asteroidal material and affects the chemistry.
We have about a minute, Jim. Do you have missions coming up with JAXA that are looking to launch in future?
Yes, we have started a conversation where we want to be involved with their upcoming mission called MMX, which means the Martians Moon Explorer. Now, this particular mission is based, it's almost like the third generation of Hayabusa. You know, it's Hayabusa 3, if you will, but with major design changes. It's going to go to Phobos and Deimos. It's going to orbit them. It's going to study them in great detail understanding their gravity, getting their mineralogy, understanding the boulder distribution on the surface, and then go over to the larger asteroid, Phobos, find a location, and then grab a sample. Now, in this particular mission, JAXA has invited NASA to participate not only in the same similar ways, but also with an instrument. So we're really quite excited to work with them and be able to have the opportunity to put an instrument, a NASA instrument, on this mission.
Dr. Jim Green, head of Planetary Sciences, the robots at NASA, David Livingston, Dr. Space of the Space Show, working with the Japanese Space Agency for sample returns from our solar system. I'm John Batchelor. This is the John Batchelor Show.